Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can. Just go to Patreon.com/CanadaEHX. Today on the podcast, I'm speaking with Cheryl Fogo, who has recently released a film on John Ware, the legendary cowboy and rancher from Alberta's history. It's released through the National Film Board, and it's called John Ware Reclaimed. Now, Cheryl has been interested in John Ware for some time, and a few years ago she released a play called John Ware Reimagined. So we're going to talk about that, we're going to talk about the film, we're going to talk about John Ware, his impact today, and the things that he dealt with that we're still dealing with today. So let's just get straight to the interview. I really enjoyed the film. It was a really interesting film to watch. I liked the blending of different genres and things like that. And so I'll get right to it. One of the things that I saw was you when you in the film, you said when you were growing up, you liked things like Gunsmoke and Bonanza and all of that. So what was your first reaction when you went to the Glenbow and you saw that there was this Black Canadian cowboy and rancher named John Ware?
It was actually my brother who first saw the picture of John Ware at the Glenbow, came home and reported on it to me. So it probably would have been a couple of years later that I saw it. I didn't have the same element of surprise that he had because of our cowboy obsession and then seeing, that there was a Black cowboy who lived in our area. But I recall having a very similar sense of awe. I was awestruck.
One common thing I do see in the film is Canada likes to portray itself as, you know, we never had slavery, Underground Railroad. It was this wonderful utopia kind of thing. Do you feel like Canada portrays itself as a haven for Blacks despite its own slavery history? And is John Ware kind of part of the story that we like to tell to say, you know, we're not as bad as the United States, for example?
Yes, I think Canada has been selective in the few small pieces of Black history that we have chosen to share as part of our national narrative. Most people in Canada have heard about the Underground Railroad, but most people in Canada don't know that people of African descent were enslaved here, just as we were in the United States. If you know anything about Western Canada's Black history, it usually is about John Ware, and that's because he was a successful person. And the assumption is made from there that he succeeded because there was no racism, when that is not true. Mm-hmm. He succeeded for a wide variety of reasons, and including despite the racism that he experienced. So that part of what you said is true. I am very puzzled by the way we always want to compare ourselves to the United States. I don't understand that. What's the point of comparing yourself to another place? Mm-hmm. Why not just address what's here and the things that have actually happened here and are continuing to happen here? I am really puzzled by why that is our narrative. Well, we're not as bad as them. That's a foolhardy narrative. It's not helpful.
Absolutely. One interesting thing I liked in the movie was you mentioned that John Ware's legacy is kind of trapped in his mythology. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, he has been turned into a larger than life figure in a number of ways. One of the ways that I think is harmful is that he is not really seen as human. He is seen as a kind of a superhuman, or, you know, I don't know quite how to describe it. So his strength is exaggerated in places, and that on the surface looks like a compliment, but it actually isn't. It's never good to take someone outside of their humanity, and it's never good to portray them as having powers that are more animal-like than human. So that's one of the ways. Another one of the ways that he's trapped in a mythology is that there's an assumption that he was a lone figure of blackness. And for that reason, you know, by erasing all the other black people who were here in his time, by ignoring the fact that we had black cowboy history in Alberta that included John Ware, but was not only John Ware, he is singled out as a figure that has come to represent, as I said earlier, all of Alberta's black history. And that is mythologizing, and it's not true. And therefore it's doesn't help us understand who we are today.
You mentioned in the movie a lot about John Ware's Cow Country. Has that book done more harm than good? I guess it brings John Ware's story to more people, but then does it kind of bring in too much of that mythology we're talking about? Like, I think in the book, it says he could lift a horse or a pony or something like that. Like some, like you said, a superhuman feat. So has it done more harm than good, or is it kind of a balance of there's good and bad to it?
I would say it's a balance. I think it's very difficult to quantify, has it done more harm than good? I appreciate the existence of the book, and I appreciate Grant McEwen having been the person to write it, because Grant McEwen was a person of such stature in the province that the story got attention simply because it was Grant McEwen that was bringing it. I do think if Grant McEwen had not written about John Ware, there may be much less conversation about him today. I mean, it's always difficult to say, well, what would have happened if this hadn't happened? However, a lot of the mythology around John Ware is centered in that book. So I would say that it is a balance of both harm done and good brought.
Has Canada kind of rewritten its race, or I guess racist history, just in the fact that we have places like John Ware Ridge, but it was under a very different name, you know, a few decades ago, and we got rid of the offensive part of that name, but then that's not really brought up in any of the things that we talk about with John Ware. So are we kind of erasing that, and then that's adding to the narrative that, well, there was no racism here for people like John Ware?
That's a very complex question. So I think the fact that that name was attached, the offensive word was attached to places named for John Ware, is about the racism that he experienced. And it is a testament to our ongoing racism, both in the past and in the present. At the same time, it never should have been there. That never should have happened. So when we talk about the fact that it did happen, we're not, by removing that name from those places, we're not erasing history. We're honoring and centering John Ware. We are not honoring and centering a word that was offensive to him and his family and to every other right-thinking person. So that's a very complex question that you're asking, and it's why I deal with it in the film, but it was an agonizing decision to address that in the film, because again, the last thing in the world I want is to center that word in my conversations about John Ware. It has nothing to do with him. That was a name that was applied to us to attack and demean us. It has nothing to do with us, and it's all about the racist connotations of it and the racism that brought it into being. So that I even have to deal with it is an example of how insidious racism is, and how it's on John Ware, or it's on me to reckon with that word and that history.
Why don't we celebrate other Black Canadian pioneers and cowboys the way that we celebrate John Ware? We have a stamp, we have, you know, the ridge, a whole bunch of places named for him. So why is he kind of the focus of Black Canadian history? Because like you mentioned, Amber Valley, I did an episode on that months ago, and it's got a fascinating history, but I've lived near Edmonton most of my life, and I never even knew Amber Valley was there until about a year ago. So why do we focus so much on John Ware and kind of not so much on other parts of specifically Alberta's Black history?
Well, that is a question that I get asked a lot, and it's a question that I would put to you and put to other Albertans, other Canadians. Why is it that we have a long and incredibly fascinating Black history in this province that is much, much bigger than what anyone knows, and we don't know about it? That is a question that we must reckon with right now. And we must all ask ourselves that question. I've been doing my part, for 30 years. For 30 years, I've been researching and sharing and telling these stories. So it's a question I'm asking everybody that's listening right now.
Absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Absolutely. Tell me a bit about Mildred. One thing I liked about the film was it kind of also was a bit of a love story between these two people who had this wonderful connection. So what role did Mildred play in the story of John Ware?
Well, I appreciate that you that part stood out for you. I think she was the completion of his happiness and his dream. I think he was able to achieve things in his cowboy and ranching life that would have been very satisfying for him. But I think he was probably lonely, and that he met Mildred, I'm sure, seemed like a stroke of great fortune. She was a very smart woman. She was very dignified, and newspaper accounts describe her as cultured. And that makes sense to me because her family is easy to research. They were a very prominent family in Southern Ontario and very successful. So it makes sense to me that she, she was a city girl from Toronto who came from a really successful Black community that was very ambitious. And they were a mismatch in many ways. He did not like the city, and she did not like the country. And that they fell in love, and that they were able to achieve what Nettie, their daughter, described as a very happy home, is a testament to their love for each other. It's an aspect of John Ware's history that I find very heartwarming as well.
Can you tell me a bit about the process and the inspiration behind your decision to make John Ware reimagined and John Ware reclaimed?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I had been very interested in John Ware from, starting out in childhood. And then when I realized my goal in life was to be a writer, and that the story that I was most interested in was Black Western Canadian life. Obviously, John Ware figured into that. You tie that into my cowboy obsession as a kid and my love of horses, and it makes sense. So I did have my John Ware file, but I was focusing on other stories that were less known. I was writing about other figures from Alberta's Black history. And then in 2012, when the Stampede was having the 100th anniversary of its inception, I was chatting with Tundi Duwadu, who was the artistic director of Africa Day. And he said, you know, maybe it's time to bust out that John Ware file and make sure that something about John Ware is included this year. That made sense to me. So I started working on a presentation for Black History Month that I called John Ware Reimagined. And that presentation was so warmly received that I then decided to turn it into a play, John Ware Reimagined, which was produced in 2014 and 2017. And it was during that process of working on the play, which is a fiction, you know, it's an imagination. Mm-hmm. I realized it would be very important to have a companion piece that was fact-based, because people were making the assumption that the dialogue that I had created between John and Mildred really happened. And of course, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the cabin. It was all, mm-hmm. that was all made up. So I wanted to have both.
I really liked when I was watching it, because when I first started watching, I was thinking I'd be watching a documentary, but you blend so many things together, the animation, archival photos, you have actors who I believe were in the play reading their parts in the film, and then you're adding in your own recollections from your own life. So what made you decide to kind of go this route to blend all of these different genres and storytelling methods together for the film?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you're right. There are several people who acted in the play read and share anecdotes from John Ware's life. Those anecdotes aren't from the play. They're not in the play. They're stories from his actual life. I had realized early on that I have very, very few archival photos at my disposal to tell this story. There just aren't very many. And that I would need, you know, a film is a visual medium, and that I would need other visual elements to tell the story. And I didn't want to have reenactments as such. I didn't want to have, you know, a cowboy. I didn't want to have John Ware and John Quirk, the Millerville neighbors, acting out, going into town and mm-hmm. having a few drinks and getting rowdy. I wanted those stories to be told directly from the words of the people who had told them or shared them or written them. And I wanted those, all of the elements, to be connected to John Ware's life in some way, because I felt that even if the audience didn't know, for example, that when Janelle Cooper shares the story of John and Mildred's marriage that was printed in the Calgary newspaper in 1892, she's sitting on the porch of the house that they were married in. Oh. When Lawrence Hill shares the anecdote about the fight that John Ware got in Calgary when someone called him a racial slur, he's on the site of where that hotel was, where that incident took place. And I felt that even though the audience may not know that, I didn't say it anywhere, I didn't have it in the text, I felt that it would add a richness and it would help to really recreate the spirit of his life. The animation I wanted because I have so little of Mildred, and I wanted us to see her moving around and not just frozen in time. The music was there because music is a part of everything I do. It's in every project I do. It's just, it's part of me. And it was part of the play. So I just wanted to thread all of the different elements of my love story with John Ware's story together. And I chose all of those elements very carefully.
What was it like to visit where Ware's cabin had once been and kind of dig into the ground and dig into history and his history.
Oh, that was a very powerful experience. I had been there many times before. I had gradually, built up a relationship with the Fisher family who live on that property in Millerville now. And they were incredibly gracious when it came time to shoot the film to allow us to come there several times for the shoot and for the dig. In addition, they're big, big Fred Whitfield fans. Fred Whitfield is the rodeo cowboy who is in the film as the presence of John Ware. So it was a bit of a win-win in that regard. I love that part of the world. I don't know if you've been able to spend much time down there, have you?
That would be so beautiful. Down near Daysland, that area, I think.
I don't know where Daysland is. It's near Millerville, Longview, Black Diamond.
Oh, I used to live in High River. Yeah, I'm very familiar with, with that area.
Yeah. Beautiful part of the world.
It is, very much so.
And then, of course, I also shot footage near Duchess Gem, north of Brooks, where John Ware's second ranch was. So we were in three different Southern Alberta locations. There's the Vulcan Kirkcaldy area as well.
What can we take from John Ware's life in our, in what ways can we look to John Ware and then look to our own lives to, better ourselves or achieve things the way that John Ware did through adversity and what he had to deal with? So how can he kind of influence our own lives today, over 100 years after his own death?
I don't know how to answer that for others. I can only share what I take from his life and what I have been taking from his life for a long time. One is that we belong where we are, that it is our honor and privilege to be on this land, and we should care for it. He was a very careful steward of the land and of animals. I think I also take from his life that you can achieve your goals despite adversity if you surround yourself with good people and push away the bad. And when I say push away, I don't mean physically. I mean, don't let those people into your head. I think I also take from his life that if you are focused on what you want to achieve and you spend some time working toward that every day, you will eventually see it come to fruition. So in many ways, I have modeled my career as a writer and a playwright and an author and a historian on that focus. I've taken inspiration from many aspects of his life. He was a loving, funny, smart person who didn't take any garbage from anybody. And I think that's a pretty good model.
Absolutely. And my last question is, so you did this through the National Film Board. When will people be able to watch it? How can they watch it? How can they get in touch with you if they want to know more about John Ware reimagined and reclaimed? All of that.
Well, people in British Columbia can see it up until October 7th, I believe, when the Vancouver International Film Festival ends. People in Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba had the opportunity to see it through the Calgary International Film Festival, but it has sold out completely, sold out both the in-person screenings and it has exceeded the cap on what they have for streaming. So as of right this moment when I'm speaking, unless something changes, we will now be looking toward community screenings in the four Western provinces. So people can get in touch with the National Film Board if they want to set up a screening in their neighborhood or their community. That's something that the Film Board is very happy to do. We're rolling out our strategy for the rest of the country, and people west of or east of Manitoba will be able to see it early next year. And then eventually, of course, it will be on the nfb.ca website, available to anyone in the world to see. So we will get it to you. I've been so touched by the response to it. I'm so grateful to everyone who has enthusiastically embraced it and you know, helped it to sell out in, in Western Canada. And as far as I know, there are still streamings available for people in BC.
It's a fantastic film. I really, really enjoyed it. I learned a lot about John Ware, and just beyond that, like, it's not just, this is his life. You know, he was born on this day and and he died this day. It's much more than that. And it's very, very well done. I very much enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Cheryl. And if you did, please give a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.ca. You can also visit my website. Just go to craig@canadaehx.ca. And if you want, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX, just like all of these wonderful patrons have. Aaron O'Hara, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Roy, Luke S., Vic Hedges, J.P. Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, Spencer M., and Iris Gray. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment, going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains, made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.